The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Third and final hour, Jimmy Sengenberger back with you. News Talk 710 KNUS, Denver's local talk leader. Thanks so much for joining us, being a part of the program. Good to be with you. Phones will be open. Texts as well. Wow, texts are always open. Phones can open up if you want to call in at 303-696-1971 in the next segment here on the program. Good to be with you. As we talk about this, this has been quite a week for the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which first had the Durham report come out, over 300 pages, breaking down so much to be concerned about with regards to the FBI, and identifying a cultural problem more than just a handful of bad apples. Which is a fascinating thing to consider. Is there a cultural problem, or is this really just, oh, we fired the people. We fired Lisa Page, Peter Strzok, Andy McCabe. They're all gone, although they're, at least Peter Strzok and Andrew McCabe have nice cushy jobs on cable news. McCabe's at CNN and Strzok is on MSNBC. And, you know, oh, we got rid of them, so it's not really a big deal. It's okay. Well, Durham's report has some fascinating revelations, which, of course, are dismissed by the likes of Andrew McCabe. Here's Andy McCabe over on CNN.
We knew from the very beginning this was never a legitimate investigation. This was a political errand to exact some sort of retribution on Donald Trump's perceived enemies in the FBI. That's what Mr. Durham has done.
So that's Andrew McCabe, who, of course, has every interest in undermining and dismissing the Durham report, and other Democrats are joining in. Hakeem Jeffries, the leader in the House, the minority leader, he dismissed it as well, saying, oh, this is just a mountain out of a molehill.
Well, I haven't had the opportunity to closely review the Durham report, but as far as I can tell, this is another example, generally, of right-wing conservatives in terms of their reaction to it, trying to make a mountain out of a molehill. And this is what...
Yeah, that's enough. Hakeem Jeffries, mountain out of a molehill. And one more Democrat, Representative Dan Goldman, lashing out at the Durham report.
You want to talk about a waste of time and money. The John Durham investigation is an embarrassment, and it should go down as one of the biggest abuses of power and waste of money in the Department of Justice's history.
And the New York Times headline, after years of political hype, the Durham inquiry failed to deliver. So yeah, the Durham report, which Democrats are dismissing, we'll find out in a moment. How legit is this? How much do we take away from it? But there was also testimony of three whistleblowers blowing the whistle in the FBI. We'll have to talk a little bit about that, too. But what's really going on in the Federal Bureau of Investigation? I'm pleased to be joined by Thomas J. Baker. He is a 33-year veteran special agent of the FBI, retired, author of the new book, a fascinating read, The Fall of the FBI, How a Once Great Agency Became a Threat to Democracy, and he will be the keynote speaker at the Arapahoe County Republican Party's Lincoln Day Dinner on June 3rd. More details about that coming up, and Thomas J. Baker joins us now. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Jimmy. I'm glad to be with you.
It's good to have you here, and we'll talk about what you detail in the book, and I'm sure you'll give us a little bit of seeds here and there throughout our conversation. But I played several clips of Democrats saying, there's no there. It's all a mountain out of a molehill. It was an illegitimate investigation altogether. Of course, Andrew McCabe would say that. Let me ask you a question. Did we actually get value out of the Durham investigation and report, or was it just a nothing burger?
Oh, no, we got a lot of it. We, the American people and the future of America, got a lot out of it, because he lays out it goes to 316 pages. And I actually read most of it. And what it does is it addresses everything that went wrong in a major situation in the American history, the so-called Russian collusion investigation of the Trump campaign, and the follow-on investigations from that. And what Durham did, he did what he was tasked to do by former Attorney General Bill Barr, is find out if there was really any predicate for this investigation, which is something, by the way, should have been the first thing that Bob Mueller looked at in his special counsel investigation. And of course, the answer, well documented and shockingly documented, is there was absolutely no predicate, no probable cause, if you will, for undertaking this investigation whatsoever. And that's shocking. And these people you've quoted, a couple of congressmen actually just now, or you played the tape of them, they should know better, because this kind of behavior ultimately is a threat to all Americans, those on the left as well as the right.
Yeah. So in that regard, how does the Durham report lay out issues of concern broadly for the American people, not just specific to the whole Crossfire Hurricane investigation and looking into Donald Trump, but the broader issues for the American public?
Okay. It's very available. It's available online. If people want to make the effort, they can read it themselves. And Durham or his team, they wrote an executive summary, which goes on only for about 7 or 8 pages, which sums everything up at the beginning. And he has a conclusion at the end. And a lot of people will just go to those two things and read them. And that sums it all up for them. But basically, what it is that a whole team of people in the Department of Justice and the FBI ignored all the guidelines that have been in existence now for about 40 years and have worked well in most instances. And what this, to my mind, reflects is a change in the culture at the Bureau. And it's become very dangerous towards Americans, because in the past, there was pre-September 11, a tremendous concern about constitutional guidelines. And Durham, at the end of his report, goes back to that. He goes all the way back to what's called the Levy Guidelines. Former Attorney General Edward Levy was the first person who wrote a set of guidelines for the FBI to conduct domestic intelligence investigations. Those guidelines were completely ignored. And that's very, very, very dangerous.
You write in your book, The Fall of the FBI, early on in the book, that firing a few miscreants is obviously not enough. Mueller's change in culture away from swear to tell the truth, law enforcement agency, is the root of the problem. And you talk about how you need to examine how great the FBI once was, and that's set up for your book. But what was it that got us to this point? I mean, Mueller, or rather Durham, doesn't necessarily talk about the origins and so forth, but elucidate for just a moment on how we could get here, Thomas J. Baker, from the original mission of the FBI and a focus on the kind of culture that you alluded to there with the past to this point now with the revelations of the Durham report.
Okay, Jimmy, it all goes back to September 11th, and this is key. Bob Mueller became the director of the FBI literally about 5 days before the September 11th attacks, which happened on Tuesday, September 11th. On that following Saturday morning, September 15th, he was called to the presidential retreat in Camp David in the woods in Maryland. And he came with a summary of the FBI's investigation to that point. Now, in the 3.5 days between Tuesday, when the attack happened, and Saturday morning, the FBI did what it does best, investigate. And it was remarkable. In 3.5 days, the FBI identified all 19 hijackers, all their connections, all their financing, all their associates, the connections back to Al-Qaeda, the credit cards they used, the rental cars they used, everything else, and gathered a lot of information from all our partners, foreign and domestic, about these 19 individuals. and who directed them. And Mueller came in and presented that report early in the morning on that Saturday to President George W. Bush, who was surrounded by his national security team. And at the end of Mueller's report, now Mueller's told me and told several groups years ago about this encounter himself. And it's several of the people who were present wrote it up. So there's no doubt this is how it happened. And when he was done speaking, President George W. Bush said to him, "I don't care about that. I just want to know how you're going to prevent the next one." So Mueller was humiliated. And he set about after that point, and he said this repeatedly, to change the FBI culture. And he said he wanted to get away from the mindset of a law enforcement agency and get them to think and act like an intelligence agency. There may have been some justification for that at the time. The intention may have been correct. But as former Attorney General Bill Barr has recently said, Mueller and then Comey threw the baby out with the bathwater.
You know, it's interesting when I read you and now hear you talk about Bob Mueller and when he was the director of the FBI and his movement in the direction of a cultural change. I kind of think it's almost no wonder, Tom Baker, that his investigation, which, by the way, cost $32 million compared to the $6.5 million of the Durham investigation, why his investigation never drew any of the conclusions that Durham did or even Horowitz did, never even examined some of those other aspects of the situation in the FBI. Because if you're sort of the origin of all of this, then you're probably not going to want to highlight that, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And the change in culture is profound. And just let me say this for the benefit of your listeners. In a law enforcement agency, especially when it's working right, and not just the FBI, but this would apply to a sheriff's office or a police department, consciously or unconsciously, everybody there, they're working forward towards the day when they're going to have to stand up in court before a judge or a jury or in a grand jury or before a magistrate and raise their right hand and swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. That creates a certain mindset and a certain approach to your work. In an intelligence agency, you deal in deceit and deception, and it's a whole different approach to things, and there's no boundaries, there's no end point. You just go in a circle and keep gathering information and gathering information. So that's the difference, and it's profound. And a lot of these complaints about the FBI in the recent year or two goes back to that change. When you hear about people out gathering information on U.S. citizens, that's what an intelligence agency does. A law enforcement agency doesn't act until there's a violation, and then they act within the, they should, in most cases they do, act within the parameters of the Constitution, the beautiful Bill of Rights that has been given to us as a gift by the Founding Fathers.
Again, we're talking with Thomas J. Baker, author of the fascinating new book, The Fall of the FBI, How a Once Great Agency Became a Threat to Democracy. And so as I'm listening to you talk about the intelligence aspect of the FBI that's developed over the last 20 plus years since September 11th and Bob Mueller's tenure as director of the FBI, I can't help but think that's how we get to an abuse of the FISA system, like we saw in the origins of the investigation Crossfire Hurricane into Trump and the whole Russia collusion hoax. I mean, when we look at what happened back then, I can't help but hear, okay, intelligence component, intelligence focus and emphasis, and then you have a FISA report based on a dossier that was uncorroborated, unsubstantiated, funded by the Clinton campaign, a campaign of the opponent of Donald Trump, who was the focus of the investigation. I mean, am I off base there, or is that how you get a FISA abuse?
Well, there was a FISA abuse, and FISA is an area where there can be some very concrete reforms, and where Congress could actually play a very significant role. Just for a second, the FISA is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which came into law in 1978 to regulate how the national government, mainly through the agency of the FBI, gathers foreign intelligence in this country. Now, there's two key words in there, foreign and intelligence. The Pfizer Act was done outside the usual framework of criminal law to give cover to the FBI as they conducted surveillance to gather intelligence on foreigners here. Now, what are we talking about? There's a lot of foreigners here and all the on diplomatic missions and otherwise. So it was just to provide intelligence because the CIA is forbidden to operate in this country, as is the NSA. So it was always directed at foreigners, number one. Number two, it was treated very seriously and as an exceptional thing. So when that came into effect in 78, Judge William Webster was the new director of the FBI. I was working in FBI headquarters then. I knew a lot of people working in the intelligence division. He would have a team of law clerks review every word in the FISA. And that first year or two, there were a couple of hundred FISAs issued every year, FISA warrants. That was that. And it grew slowly over the years. It was never intended, and it was forbidden initially, to use FISA against an American. If an American was accused of working with a foreign intelligence agency or helping a foreign terrorist organization, they were to be pursued under criminal law, and it exists, the Espionage Act, the Treason Act. There's a whole variety of laws. You can go after them, and then the electronic surveillance is done through Title III, a criminal process, and it's available for people to challenge in court when they are charged with a crime. After September 11, things started to change, and all of a sudden there are thousands, and now it's multiple of thousands, of FISA warrants every year, and the Inspector General told us in this whole process, there's thousands being done on Americans. And Carter Page, of course, the example that comes up in this case, is a U.S. citizen. There were four FISA warrants on him over the course of a year, and it turned up nothing. There's the nothing burger. This guy, they could have just called him in and talked to him. They didn't have to do this intrusive warrant against an American, which an American citizen has no appeal of. Long way of saying the fundamental reform is to restore FISA to its original intention to gather information, intelligence on foreigners resident in this country. Full stop. Not to be used against U.S. citizens. That's the fundamental reform that can be made by the
Yeah, I think that makes abundant sense. Tom Baker, author of The Fall of the FBI. Tom will be the keynote speaker at the Arapahoe County Republican Party's Lincoln Day dinner on June 3rd. I'm very pleased to be the MC that evening and also interview you on stage there as well. Folks can get tickets if interested at ArapahoeRepublicans.org. And one of the things that we saw this week as well, that I wanted to ask you about as we start to wind down our conversation, Thomas J. Baker, is the whistleblowers that testified this week before the U.S. House of Representatives and Chairman of the Committee, Jim Jordan, got into it with Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz about whether or not these are even whistleblowers. Just take a little listen to this.
It's shocking that the gentleman.
That is not right.
It's shocking
fact,
that the gentleman
spoke so much about
Mr.
the whistleblower
Chairman,
and the impeachment.
It's shocking that
we
the gentleman from New York
all of the
would
information
state that
we had
when you were part
yes,
of an investigation
gave you all
with an anonymous
of the information
whistleblower.
You had. We have.
Chairman, these individuals
Mr. Chairman,
haven't
I,
been
I can't,
declared
I can't hear five people at once. Could
I know.
We have regular
it,
order?
Mr.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, it
Chair
I'm,
recognizes it's. I'm inquiring, and I was not.
And I've told you that when it comes to whistleblowers, you are not entitled to it. That's
these
at the discretion of Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chairman, these
he
individuals have been determined not
to
be whistleblowers.
To
these are not whistleblowers. They've been determined by the agency not to be whistleblowers. Are you deciding that they're whistleblowers?
Yes, the law decides. Did you not listen to Mr. Levitt's testimony? Did you not read the law? The
his
law decides that they are whistleblowers.
In the context of the Durham report and the cultural discussion that we are having, Tom Baker, what do you make of that exchange on whistleblowers and from the whistleblower testimony this week? Was there value in it? Does that sort of underscore or put a pin on your point?
Absolutely. There is tremendous value in it, without a doubt. These are current agents who are observing and reporting on some of these abuses. And the problem in the FBI now, the role of the special agent actually has been diminished. You have people brought in directly, made their superiors, giving orders who did not have that experience, that training in the Constitution. There's this whole new cadre of employees intelligence analysts and the current agents tell me they're driving the agenda. And the tape you played there, and I experienced this 2 months ago when I testified to that same committee. Unfortunately, some of the Democratic members of the committee, as you just heard, they're not interested in the substance of the information being offered. They're attacking the messenger, so to speak, and often very unfairly. And that's a fun, big mistake. I think the Democrats should unite with the Republicans on this in trying to reform the FBI, because these abuses are a threat to everybody's liberty.
Yeah, I think that's very well put. Again, Thomas J. Baker, our guest. I want to ask you a final question to wrap things up. And you talk in your book a lot about this. You wrote in the Wall Street Journal this week an op-ed as well called "The Durham Report Finds Bad Apples Have Spoiled the FBI." And in your book, "The Fall of the FBI," you say, quote, "The first step in fixing a problem is recognizing the problem. The few rotten apples explanation for, quote, what went wrong at the FBI is a dodge. The culture must be fixed, and to fix it, one must acknowledge the problem." Expand for a moment on the solution here in terms of how that culture can be fixed. And what are your thoughts on those who say, we can't just reform the FBI, we have to disband it altogether?
Yes, I'm not an advocate for disbanding it, because we need the FBI, but we need the FBI performing to the rule of law. When I became a new agent, and this existed for years, a lot of our classroom training was on the Constitution, particularly the first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights. And we were actually told that the Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment, we should not look at as an obstacle to be overcome. We should embrace it. And we were all given back then a pocket copy of the Constitution to keep with us, keep in our breast pocket, and always think of it when we went out to interview an American or to search somebody's home. That kind of an attitude, which some people think sounds corny, but that kind of an attitude needs to be restored. A reverence for the Constitution, operating within the limits of the Constitution. And unfortunately, the intelligence mindset leads people astray. This has to become the primacy again, the Constitution, the first 10 amendments, and stop talking and acting and putting yourself forward as an intelligence agency. You still have a counterintelligence mission, but act and behave like a swear-to-tell-the-truth law enforcement agency. And essentially, in other words, that's the conclusion of the Durham report as well.
It's a fascinating read, The Fall of the FBI, How a Once Great Agency Became a Threat to Democracy. Its author, 33-year veteran, retired FBI Special Agent Thomas J. Baker, who will be the keynote speaker at the Arapahoe County Republican Party's Lincoln Day Dinner on June 3rd. I'll be the MC and also interviewing after his talk, Tom Baker. You can get more details and tickets at ArapahoeRepublicans.org. Thomas J. Baker, thanks so much for your insights this morning. Really appreciate it. And best of luck with the book. It's a fascinating read indeed.
Thank you, Jimmy. It was great speaking to you this morning.
I'll look forward to seeing you in person on the 3rd.
And myself as well.
All right. Thank you, sir. Once again, Tom Baker, author of The Fall of the FBI. We're going to take a break. What do you think about that conversation and the insights from Thomas J. Baker, 303-696-1971. You can also text into the show on the 710KNUS app on your smartphone. Keep it right here. It's the Jimmy Sengenberger Show on News Talk 710KNUS. Liar's Dice Blues by Eric Sardina is bringing us back. Best damn bumper music known to man, nearly 10 years running. The Jimmy Sengenberger Show. I thought this was pretty apropos after our discussion on the FBI with Thomas J. Baker, author of The Fall of the FBI, How a Once Great Agency Became a Threat to Democracy. A fascinating read. And he clearly laid out the case for why the Democrats are, as one listener texted in a bit ago, Hakeem Jeffries, the leader in the House for the Dems, said that Republicans are making a mountain out of a molehill. Well, one listener texted in and said Democrats are making a molehill out of a mountain. And I think that is quite true indeed. Another texting saying, I'll be buying Mr. Baker's book. I think you will enjoy that read. And again, Tom Baker will be the keynote speaker for the Arapahoe County Republican Party's Lincoln Day Dinner on June 3rd. ArapahoeRepublicans.org. I'll be the MC. Come and meet me. come and meet Thomas J. Baker, hear more insights from him on the FBI. If this is something that's really of interest to you, there needs to be a fundamental reformation here. The big thing that he got in this book that is really pinned down in the Durham report is the cultural rot within the FBI, away from the central cultural ethos of the FBI for many decades. And Durham writes in his report, quote, "The answer is not the creation of new rules, but a renewed fidelity to the old." And he's particularly referencing the guiding principles of fidelity, bravery, and integrity. That's what Durham concludes, and before that, that's what Thomas J. Baker concluded in the fall of the FBI. Now, Bill Barr, the former attorney general who brought on John Durham to be special counsel and look into Crossfire Hurricane and the Russiagate election conspiracy theory, he was on Fox News this week and he talked about why the Durham report matters.
This goes to the heart of making sure that law enforcement power is not abused to interfere in politics. This is fundamental in civil rights. I didn't hear anyone complaining when the FBI was being investigated for getting into civil rights groups and abuses back in the 60s and 70s. In fact, that was being cheered on by the left. This was investigating a presidential campaign based on a lie, no evidence, not even dismissing all the exculpatory evidence. I invite people to look at that report. It's great reading. And the number of instances where the FBI made decisions that are inexplicable are breathtaking.
Indeed. And that's just in regards to one investigation into Trump-Russia. What Thomas J. Baker breaks down in the fall of the FBI in quite a good amount of detail are a slew of other instances where the FBI's culture caused major problems. This is just one example. It is just one example of what's happening. I mean, my goodness. And I look and I see the Durham report and I see the Democrats' attempts to just belittle it and say nothing to see here is it's undermining an effort that is important to get at the actual problem, the actual issue, which is much broader than just Trump and one investigation. By the way, I should mention the fall of the FBI author Thomas J. Baker, when he's at the Arapaho Republican Lincoln Day dinner, they will be selling books and having a book signing at the Lincoln Day dinner as well. So that's something to keep in mind. Always good when an author comes and does something like that. I'm very much looking forward to that evening, and we'll see what happens then. We're going to take a break here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. When we come back, I got to get back to some education topics, what's happening in Denver Public Schools and what's happening with regard to Woodland Park School District and NBC News' attack that we played earlier on in the program. You're listening to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show here on Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. You know, it's a damn good bumper tune when Leroy's cranking it up on the speakers on the other side of the glass. Leroy Duffenbaugh, producer extraordinaire. Welcome back to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, wrapping up and winding down. Peter Boyle's on location today at Vickery E-Bikes. He'll be broadcasting remote from 9 until noon. Good to be with you on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. News Talk 710 KNUS, which, along with the Centennial Institute, presents the 2023 Western Conservative Summit, June 9th and 10th at the Colorado Convention Center. Featuring Lauren Boebert, Eric Metaxas, Ken Buck, Riley Gaines, Frank Gaffney, Tulsi Gabbard, Larry Elder, Josh Hawley. News Talk 710 KNUS is the official station of the 2023 Western Conservative Summit. Get tickets online now at 710KNUS.com. com. Listener text coming in with the music before. Turn it up. Yes, indeed. You gotta love the best bumper music known to man. NBC Nightly News on Thursday night took after Woodland Park. Here's a snippet of what we played earlier.
Woodland Park, Colorado, a tight-knit conservative mountain community, has grown so divided, high school junior Jacob D. Smith says he no longer recognizes his hometown.
It's been chaos. The school board has started to introduce a political divide to a group that had never had one.
Do kids feel like adults?
Because the unions had all control.
No.
For years, Woodland Park school board meetings were uneventful. Now they look more like this.
You're a bunch of thieves and cowards. I can't wait to vote you up.
Ever since new school board members won seats campaigning on conservative values and then made sweeping changes.
And it goes on and on and on with a disingenuous attack on the Woodland Park School Board. We talked with Vice President of the Board, David Illingworth, last Saturday, 7 a.m. hour, for the entire hour about what's happening at Woodland Park. And we're able to debunk some of the misnomers that NBC News was already attacking them with. Well, Thursday night they did this hit piece, and it is full of refutable untruths, deceptions, lies, misleading components. It goes on and on. You can see a full debunking of what ended up being the same story, in essence, as the NBC article that we critiqued last week. I have a piece in the Federalist National op-ed. Teachers union swarm small-town conservative school board that dares to reform public education. And look, the reality is that they don't like school choice. They don't want you have... The far left Colorado Education Association passing that resolution, claiming that capitalism, condemning capitalism for inherently exploiting children, public schools, land, labor, and resources, and blaming capitalism for systemic racism, climate change, patriarchy, education inequality, and income inequality. And radical union member Tim Hernandez said on Twitter, after this resolution was approved, CEA may now publicly advocate and lobby for anti-capitalist policies at the Colorado Capitol. Tim Hernandez, by the way, also is the featured focus of a Fox News article. Colorado teacher calls for forceful cultural revolution, forceful in all caps, targeted at whiteness. He is far extreme. And he was praising this resolution. So you know exactly what the CEA is going for. Well, here's the thing. The CEA, I write this in my op-ed, the CEA resolution isn't just a political statement. It affirms the anti-free market mindset of the teachers' unions. They oppose school choice and charters. Their resistance to this, the success of the new charter school, the first charter school in Woodland Park Schools, Merritt Academy, is a case in point. Why be concerned if you and your traditional schools have a superior product? Let's be real here. Any model exposing their failures is a threat. Capitalistic competition is deemed unacceptable to teachers' unions because they simply aren't about the kids. As longtime union boss Albert Schenker infamously said, "When school children start paying union dues, that's when I'll start representing the interests of school children." But I would add that the unions don't even do a decent job at actually representing the interests of teachers. But this is all why teachers' unions and the national media care about and are converging on Woodland Park, Colorado. If they successfully thwart this school board's efforts to prioritize academic achievement, cut out ideological agendas, not entrench them, and address learning loss, then it's going to signal that it's open season on reform-minded school boards everywhere. Full stop. They have to thwart it now, and that's why they're doing this. And why they ignore a place like Denver Public Schools, where only 5% of black and brown third graders can read at grade level. So why in the world does Alex Marrero, the superintendent of Denver Public Schools, get a 10% raise with the possibility of up to 24%, going up to $305,000 from his current rate salary of $276,000 and change, and with a performance bonus as possible? What is going on here when Denver Public Schools is cratering? Well, I would say a couple of things real quick as we wrap up. Because it was very interesting. You had Tay Anderson and the other two in the what I call the Tay Three, Scott Esserman and Michelle Quattlebaum. The three of them voted no. They voted down the raise for Marrero, whereas the other four voted yes on Thursday. Now, was this some genuine effort? Like, oh, we don't think that the time is right, so we're not going to do it now? No. I would submit to you that the K3 have been actually, for reasons very different from why you and I are critical of Marrero, they've been gunning for the superintendent for like 8 months. And I started noticing and writing and speaking about this back in November, December of last year. They went into a four-hour executive session under spurious terms, under a spurious basis, going into an executive session behind closed doors, supposedly to have something to do with Marrero's contract. And yet, one school board member, Scott Balderman, voted no because he said, I don't even know what we're actually going to be talking about. They've been gunning for Marrero and wanting to do it behind closed doors for many, many months. And now, Marrero, it sounds like, is seeking another job. Maybe in Yonkers, New York, is what I'm hearing. He wants out. He wants somewhere else. Who can blame him with the dysfunction of the board? He was set up to fail right from the beginning. Not intentionally. But, you know, he's looking for elsewhere. So those four, it seems to me, want to try and keep him. So let's give him a raise so we can try and give him an incentive not to leave, because they already lost a previous superintendent, Susana Cordova, because of a dysfunctional school board. She was basically forced out and resigned. They're worried, I think, I would suspect, about the same thing happening with Marrero, and even if he does still leave, not being able to attract a replacement. But Anderson, Esserman, and Quattlebaum, they're playing games here, and this is not some leadership effort. Don't give them credit for this. That's it for me. I'll be in next Saturday. Peter's on location today. Tune in next Saturday, and may God bless America.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.